there, and welcome to another episode of the London Theatre Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Hartwell, broadcasting once again from my bedroom, the official studio of the lockdown. Thank you for joining us again. We are keeping the boat afloat. We're talking to two creatives who currently have one of the only gigs in town at the moment. They are literally in the wings, creating some amazing content through online with In the Wings, which is, well, I'll let them talk about it. But we've got Justin Williams, a recurring guest. Welcome, Justin. Theatre designer extraordinaire. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having us.
And we're joined with musical director Henry Brennan. Welcome, Henry. First time into
the
podcast.
Hi, thank you.
Is this your first podcast as well, Henry? Have you done
it,
this?
It is my first podcast, actually.
Wow, I'm honoured. I really am. this, I mean, you can't. We're on Zoom as well at the moment. You can't see this, but this is the backgrounds. Usually there would be a studio, Henry. I'd make you a cup of tea and an official mug. This is not the usual podcast setup. Of course, Justin didn't get that. We went to your school last time, Justin. But
you did, yeah. Yeah, we were in interview number one.
Yes, and listeners can go back and I'll link that interview so you can find out all about Justin's background in design and how he balanced that with teaching and how he got into it. It's a fascinating chat. And before we sort of jump into In the Wings, let's just check in with both of you because obviously these are strange times, and whilst there's a lot I think that unites us, I think each person's got their own kind of experience of how lockdown is going, and it's sort of a continuing process as each day seems to throw up new existential crises. So I just wanted to get a feel, first of all, before we jump in, just where you're both at with this whole lockdown. How are you feeling? You can't see it. The awkward pause isn't an awkward pause. They are just back and forth on Zoom pointing at who's going to go first. Sorry, that's my... I should lead by example. So, Henry, as first... this is your first podcast. How are you doing? How's things?
Yeah, it's been an interesting experience. Obviously, I don't think anyone saw it coming or expected it to go on as long as it has gone on. At first, it was almost a welcome break. I mean, I'm sure there's loads of other people in the industry who felt the same way, but I'd been working pretty non-stop for a while. And whilst I was grateful to be working, I didn't realise how much I'd sort of been putting the rest of my life on hold. So when the lockdown happened, it sort of forced me to take a break, which was nice. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel sort of like guilty for having that break. And it was a really nice break to start with. And then it got to a point where I was like, I need to be creative. I need to be doing something more. Which is what In the Wings has been. It's been nice to get back to work a bit now.
Yeah, nice to have a breathe. And you're right, like no one really saw it coming. I wish I almost had, because I would have bought shares in Zoom. You know what I mean? Like, make a fortune out of it. But I know what you mean about needing a break and not realizing you needed a break until you got the break, because it's just so, especially sort of going into a new year, you feel this momentum behind you, don't you? Of like, okay, it's 2020. What are the projects I want to do? What are the things I want to get off the ground? I mean, Justin, you and I were supposed to be working on something this year. I was so excited to be working with you. You've drawn up some amazing designs for a play. And then just as we were about to get it going, it fell by the wayside. How have you been doing, man?
I think Henry's story is very similar to my own. I'm a self-confessed workaholic and enjoy that. And I find it very difficult initially when the work was taken away to know what to do with myself, because I had to have quite a strict pattern to how I worked, balancing school and set design. And when both of those went, and suddenly there was this kind of abyss of free time, as it were, it initially was great and I enjoyed it, and I found myself doing all sorts of things that, you know, you don't usually do. I think for me, one of the worst things was losing momentum altogether and deadlines disappearing and, you know, not knowing what day of the week it was. But sharing that lethargy with everybody, you know, there was nobody around me that was motivated, that everybody had to stop. And I think that was really alien to me, because I work with Henry, so I know what his output is and how dedicated he is to what he does. And it was very surreal, where we all switched off at the same time. It was like everybody had their reset button pressed, and we were back at some default setting that wasn't familiar to me. So I found that difficult, and I went through periods I remember of enjoying it and feeling no guilt at all for putting down the tools, because no one else was working. I didn't feel that I was comparing myself to other people. And then also then this awful sadness, because it was like some kind of autumn in the work schedule where everything fell, and all the jobs were cancelled for the year ahead. Our project that you mentioned, Henry and I were working on a ton of projects. And for me, a big project that I'd always dreamt of doing and pitching for a New York project was on the cards in May. And oh, wow. That obviously got cancelled. And that was that was big, because it was kind of, I knew I'd been working towards it for a good year. And the shock of that disappearing was one of the biggest things, because I don't know, it was a kind of like a pinpoint in the horizon that I was working towards.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was hard, because everything had gone, even your hobbies had gone, and that was strange. You couldn't go out and escape from it like I usually do with theatre. You know, you were really confronted with yourself and how you're going to deal with it.
That's a really good point, being confronted by yourself. I think one positive I've sort of tried to tell myself is that I'm trying to not get into the habit of saying things are cancelled, that they're postponed. But obviously the reality of some projects is pretty much. But then the context and the experience that you've made through, you know, to get you there, I think hopefully when this all starts up again, and I'm just trying to be optimistic and positive, really, because if I start putting out depressing podcast, I'll probably be blamed for some stuff. But that the time it will take to get back to where you were will be halved, if not shorter. You know, that your experience, that while you've lost that opportunity, the experience and the context that you have gained will make that.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think time gave us the opportunity to realise that it's a gap year, and it's, you know, people have gap years for a reason, and you grow as a person, and you learn more, and you challenge yourself in different ways. And you know, Henry painted a really kind of positive picture of how he's dealt with it, and I took longer to get to that point, but I'm so grateful for particularly this project and how it turned my views around. And I've listened to other people's stories and realized, you know, everyone's working hard for this to come back and for theatre to return. And I think that's why In the Wings was so important to Henry and I, because it was an opportunity to fight against the postponement of a lot of these projects, but also to share these stories, because the more Henry and I spoke about how we were feeling, the more I realized that I was getting through it better.
Yeah.
So that's what this became, a platform to speak to other people about their experiences.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that's been really interesting for me about, particularly within The Wings, was hearing other people talking about their stories and realizing that there are so many people that we've all been affected by the same thing, but everyone is reacting in different ways to it. And there is still a sense of optimism in the industry. I mean, there are obviously loads of fear-mongering tweets and news articles every other day, but there is still a lot of optimism out there, and people are still grafting, even in lockdown, whether it's rewriting musicals or putting out material of them singing stuff. There's still this sense that it will come back. It might not be exactly the same as before. Hopefully it evolves. And like, obviously there's been a lot of discussion lately about how the industry needs to evolve moving forwards. And I think this is a really great opportunity for that to happen.
Yeah. Well, let's come on. That neatly brings us on then to In the Wings. So when you guys first got together, because it's obviously the first episode had an amazing initial sort of launch pad. Like, was it over 3,000? It's 3.7, I think. That's amazing. And watching it, like the quality, and the link, by the way, for listeners will be in the description to check out episode one. And episode two will be out tonight, because I'm going to edit this podcast in time. I will. Note to self. The quality is amazing. And so where was this recorded? Where did you get the space to do this?
We were lucky enough to have the Union Theatre.
It's brilliant watching the Zoom. Sorry,
go on.
I should be recording the Zoom as well, just to see the kind of like, you got this eyes. It's very reassuring. I wish someone had that.
I'm glad you're not, because I need a haircut.
Trust me.
It's funny, when you work with someone so long, you kind of just get to know what the eye twitch means. I definitely got that's your answer, eye twitch, then, from Henry.
Yeah, you did.
I forgot the question, though. What was the question?
What was the space that you used to make this?
Well, we're so lucky to have, as a kind of home base, the Union Theatre. It's been a real kind of homeland to Henry and I. We've kind of cut our teeth on a lot of projects there, and Sasha Regan is a very good friend of ours.
Another former guest of the podcast, which you can go back and listen to as well. One of the first, yeah, I think. Good old Sasha. Yeah, love it.
Yeah, and she's fantastic, yeah. And, you know, like, theatre's mother figure, and gave us a lot of opportunities, and it felt right to have this project go back to that base, to that home, that kind of home feeling. And obviously, like many theatres, it's just sitting there and it's not being used. Sasha, being Sasha, has got a lot of proactive plans for what she's going to do with it, but knowing it was sitting there and knowing that we had this kind of plan brewing, just that felt like a logic place to turn to.
And what was that like going into a theatre again? I mean, that must have been quite a strange feeling.
Yeah, it was a bit surreal. The first time we went into the theatre was the first time the theatre had been reopened since lockdown, and sort of going into this space that had been shut for 8 or 9 weeks was really bizarre, but it did feel a bit like going home in a weird way. It was strange.
You didn't find like a troop of rats that had sort of set up their own touring company whilst all the humans were away, like Rat Theatre had started or something, thriving in all these fringe spaces?
We did joke about that. We did wonder. But obviously the theatre itself had a production on when the news came that it needed to close. So the dressing room was an abandoned working dressing room with people's good luck cards and sessions. So it was like exploring a time capsule. It was very strange, very surreal.
That must have been quite, harrowing in a way. It's strange how things just got, left. And just for our listeners who maybe haven't watched an episode yet, what is the sort of content on offer here within the Wings?
So Justin and I wanted to highlight some shows that were cancelled or postponed because of coronavirus. So we've got 4 episodes. The first episode, which was aired last week, is about No Limits, which was a song cycle that was supposed to happen at the Other Palace. And then this week is Legends of Aramar. The week after that is Gretel, the musical. And after that, we've got Dorian, a rock musical. And every episode has 3 songs from that musical performed by a West End cast, and 1 song from a musical that inspired the composer or the writer of that show to write the musical. And then interspersed in between all of those songs, we have interviews with someone involved with the show in a way, whether it's a composer, a writer, or a musical director. And they're being interviewed by Richard Thomas, the Olivier Award-winning composer.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I mean, you must have had quite a line of shows like lining up to sort of get involved, just because, you know, the amount of shows that did just suddenly find themselves in limbo. How has the response been? How was the response to last week's episode? What the sort of feedback are you getting?
I can't believe how great the response was. I wasn't ready for that. I've been really taken aback, and I still am, by what people say, because I mean, obviously we took it seriously, but to Henry and I, it was an idea that we had that we ran with to tell, you know, these stories of postponed productions. But it's the things that have come out of it, like how much people love the live aspect of it, that you've got a live band, it's recorded in a live take, so you've got that kind of energy. And obviously you're in a theatre environment with lighting. It feels like what we remember. And I'll also never forget when we were doing those takes with the performers in the space, particularly with Steph Parry, where I'd watch her do, they did 3 takes and we'd choose the best one from those 3 takes. Mm. And you could see each time she finished, there was this bittersweet expression on her face. And afterward, I was always wondering what it was and guessing. And then afterwards, she said she loved doing it so much. And then she'd also feel sad because she didn't know when she might do it again, when she would have a chance to sing again live with a band in a theatre. So as much as it was lovely to do that take and be happy that it went well, it was also sad because that might be the last time she does it for a while. So to be part of something where that's the reaction in someone and we hadn't foreseen that, that's probably the thing I take the most from it. I didn't anticipate how much it meant to some people, and that's a lovely thing.
Yeah. Henry, for you, what was your sort of initial reaction to the feedback?
Yeah, I mean, it's been fantastic. I don't think Justin and I ever sort of put like a number on what we wanted in terms of the number of people we wanted to see or anything like that. We were sort of doing this as a bit of a passion project, and it's grown into something that people are really appreciating it, and it's really lovely to get that feedback.
Yeah, what's lovely about it is because of course you could just do like great hits from other musicals and that's, but the fact that you're focusing on shows that have been directly affected in terms of, you know, being postponed, you know, like they should be on right now performing these, that you're sort of almost righting the wrong of the pandemic by sort of fulfilling some sort of aspect of that, like you say, that bittersweet sort of need to perform. So it must be so vital to those performances as well. To the performers, sorry, just to give them some sort of sense of closure, because we all love that sort of final night, don't we, of a show, and you know, you drink and party with your fellow cast members and creatives, and you put the show to bed, or you know, or there may be hopes for the future of a transfer or something, but there's a psychological effect of like closing a show, and the fact you're giving at least some element of that to performers, I think is fantastic. And I wasn't really going anywhere with that, with a question. I was just sort of blabbering on, as I do sometimes. How did it work technically? I just got to ask, because like you say, you had a band there. You obviously have the recording, the lighting, and you've got all the technical aspects of, you know, it felt like watching a professional show, because it was, you know what I mean, through the screen. How did it work with social distancing and getting things organized and produced and stuff? How did that all come together?
It was a lot of work. As Justin mentioned earlier, we both worked at the Union before, so it was a little bit easier for us in terms of planning it out because we could obviously visualize the space quite well. Between us, we spent ages like just reading government guidelines and making sure that everything we were doing would be in accordance with all of them and making sure that like wherever we could, distances were well above the amount that the government suggested for social distancing. The band were always at least 4 or 5 meters away from the performer when the government guidelines are only 2 meters. And just being really careful about everything was probably actually the hardest part of putting it all together, just making sure that everyone would be safe. And that's obviously the most important part of it as well. And it's sort of, for us at least, it was eye-opening in that shows that it is possible for theatre to still continue.
Yeah.
It is in a different form, but, and it does require a lot more work and a lot more attention, but there is a possibility there, I think, which is nice.
Yeah. And Justin, in terms of like the design aspect, I mean, could you get in and sort of do what you do best, you know, get some sort of amazing setup and, you know, how did you sort of bring your skills to this? I bet you had itchy fingers through the whole thing.
I mean, we went in on that first date with Sasha to open the theatre and really looked at the space, and it was interesting to look at it with new eyes because obviously everything that I'd learned, particularly from a design aspect, needed to be rethought. The positioning of the band, for example, the position of the performer was totally different to how you'd set it out for a live audience. And it was tempting to kind of go, well, let's make a set for it, let's put something in. But I think this became more about the people who were in it and the stories that were to be told than me doing what I did best. I mean, this very much was all of us out of our comfort zones, picking up new skills and trying new things. I'm certainly not a PR marketing person, but that's been, you know, something I've picked
up. You are now, Justin. You are now.
Oh, apparently so. But, you know, like, everybody involved in the team has picked up something slightly different. And that's been scary at times to get it right and get it to the standards that we wanted. So, to answer your question, it was odd going in and going, no, I'm not going to design this space. I'm going to make it interesting and an attractive space. But it was more about us getting the safety of it right so that it could be a long-term, you know, viable platform for these stories. Yeah. It was more designing where the cameras would be and how we'd tell the story from different angles, how we'd make an interview look intimate even though they're sat so far apart, and using the kind of forced perspective and different angles to break that up so you're not looking, because the problem with Zoom is obviously you've got that one shot of the person straight on. We wanted to bring that feel of what's it like in the front row, what's it like being stage left watching it, and so that's where maybe the design stuff came in through the camera work.
Yeah, it's good tips for interviews. I've noted a few things down for when I eventually get my act together, because front on like this on Zoom is not my most flattering angle. I need sort of lights and some sort of staging to make this face look presentable. You've both mentioned working at the union and sort of your background there. How did you two first meet? What did you collaborate on? What was the project that first formed this union?
The first show we worked together on was Twang, back in 2018, I want to say.
Think it was 18. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then we've done 200 shows ever since. That's what it feels like. It's bizarre. It's coincidence, but people, you know, we've worked with a couple of the same people, but Twang was such an awesome experience because the team involved in that brought so much out of an interesting script. if that's the right word for it. It was a revival, really, or rewrite of a show. But I think when you're lucky enough to work with a couple of people who really get who find the best in you and bring out the best in you, you kind of hold on to that and make that happen again if you can. But by pure coincidence, we've worked continually together, really, on stuff. They seem to keep picking, I don't know, whoever's left over, which must be us.
Don't say it like that.
All the good ones, when all the good ones are used.
No. Well, I mean, this has got to be a brilliant showcase for what can be done in theatres, but also what you guys are doing as well. So, you know, you never know who's going to be calling up next, I suppose, asking for the same thing, because you were mentioned earlier about how theatre can evolve. And what do you think sort of going forward from this? Because look, judging just by the reactions to the first episode, you know, that there's a scope for this, and, you know, there may be a way, especially for sort of fringe and off West End spaces that, you know, obviously, there's a lot of talk in the press at the moment about the West End and how the West End is going to survive and all these redundancies and whatnot. But the fringe, you know, the spaces that are much more intimate, which I personally prefer as a performer and an audience member, the intimate spaces. How do you think this is a viable way going forward, that they maybe could start some sort of online library of shows that you could pay a subscription for or a one-off fee for to watch online? Do you think from this experience that's doable? Either one of you, jump in. Who's going to do it? Who's brave enough? Solve all of theatre, Henry. Go. Off you go.
I'm just going to say this. Go on, Henry.
Oh, thanks, Justin. I think, straight away, once everything started to lock down, I think performers especially were sort of naturally drawn to creating online content almost immediately. Like, we did start getting a lot of live-streamed concerts and stuff, a lot of them from bedrooms and living rooms, but that was just the available platform and format. I think what we've done within the wings is, not to get trumpety about it, but we've sort of taken it to the next step, which is putting it back into a theatre and doing it from a theatre. I don't know about the viability of like a subscription platform. It might be doable. Like, there would be a lot of work involved, I'm sure, and whoever can pull that off, kudos to them. But yeah, like, it's working out what the next step is, and maybe that is doing a sort of a combination of having an audience in and also streaming it. Like, I think the old Vic's doing that with shows in the future.
Yeah, they're doing Lungs, I think,
Yeah.
coming up, aren't they? A live performance of it, which may be the future, I suppose. Yeah, it's such a weird time, isn't it? But hey.
I think going back to what you said about fringe theatre, though, I think I sense this huge renaissance in theatre after this. The desire to tell stories and rework how we told old tales, and how theatre maybe works in general can be a new way of doing it. And maybe theatre goes into a kind of multi-format where you have a live performance that you can attend, but you can also stream it at the same time. So theatre's accessible. You know, you could see a West End show live tonight, but you could be living in Manchester and experience it. And that becomes the norm, because I moved to London so that I could work in this industry. Because really, if I felt at the time, if I wanted to be taken seriously, I needed to be here. But wouldn't it be wonderful for theatre lovers to be able to access West End theatre wherever you were, and even fringe theatre, because as you said, I've seen some of the best work in fringe, and most imaginative and most daring. But it would be amazing if, you know, you're able to visit it live. That would always be my preference. But you know, in a socially distanced, aware culture that we'll be in from now on, maybe, you know, it'll be a 50-50 split. Half your audience come and watch online, half of them are in attendance. You've still got that live buzz that would be picked up in the streaming, but you know, it just opens up maybe a slightly, I don't know, well, theatre was becoming slightly elitist, where you know, people were paying £250 to watch names in shows. You know, maybe a bubble burst there that needed bursting. You know, it's awful what's happened, but being forced to look at something that was kind of becoming unavailable for the masses, that's not what theatre should be about. So, you know, maybe
Absolutely.
we're being forced to look at something much more fair to everybody.
That's really interesting. An interesting point. Yes, I love that idea that this is going to bring a renaissance, because, like you say, we've only been in lockdown. What feels like 5 years, but it's only been a few months. But look at the content that's already coming out and the platforms like the one you've created that showcases. I think it's fantastic. Good on you guys. Now I presume these next three episodes have already been recorded, right? They're already sort of ready to go. Have you already started thinking about I'm always doing this sort of like pushing towards the future. Doing any more episodes after this? Is it too soon to sort of say? What's the Justin's doing some pointing. Henry, I think that's you volunteering there. What's the
I think it
future?
is. Obviously, when we first started talking about doing In the Wings, we had a long list of shows that we were interested in showcasing, and we sort of only had the opportunity to do four shows, so we had to pick four shows, which was difficult enough. So there is still a list of shows that we would like to showcase. I'm not going to say for certain that there would be a second series,
That's
but
fine. You don't have to give me the exclusive today, Henry. I'll get it out of you eventually.
yeah, there's still a list of shows that we'd love to discuss on In the Wings.
I guess before we sort of close, because obviously we've got an episode on tonight, because I will edit this in time. What are audiences going to be experiencing tonight? What's the show? What's the focus this time?
So the episode tonight is Legends of Aramur, which is a musical written by Joe Perdue and Dries Janssens. It's a mega fantasy musical. It's got, I mean, the full orchestration of it is epic. It's a big adventure musical. I can't tell you the plot off the top of my head.
That's fine. Leave something to the imagination. That's great.
Yeah, so we've got our fantastic cast of four performers, which we haven't mentioned yet. We've got Laura Pick, Steph Parry, Aaron Lee Lambert, and Dougie Carter. They'll all be singing, or three of them will be singing a song from the show. And then we've got Joe Perdue being interviewed, who's the composer, being interviewed by Richard Thomas, and just discussing how coronavirus has affected his show and what the plan is moving forward and what the industry might look like in the future.
Brilliant. That's amazing. And as a musical director as well, Henry, I mean, when these performers come in, because these shows have already been sort of in the works, so do you feel as a director that you can kind of get in and sort of give them the three takes that you need? Can you you know, give them some direction, or is it, does it feel like, you know, because if there's another director attached to the show, or there was, do you feel a bit weird kind of then getting involved? How's it work?
No, I didn't feel strange getting involved. I think what we've done, we've sort of taken them out of context from the shows a little bit. Obviously, because we don't have the same band that we did, that the original productions would have had, I've rearranged the music for a different band, which sort of gave me a chance to sort of put my fingerprint on it a little bit. So when it came to the day when we literally did three takes of each song and then moved on, mm-hmm. And in those three takes, there was definitely a chance for me to sort of direct it a little bit in the way that I would do it if I was MDing that show, which was nice. And it was really great to work with. I hadn't worked with any of the performers before, so getting to work with these performers, and it was really nice coming out of lockdown, sort of like traipsing through London in secret to go to a theatre and create something again. It was a really surreal experience, but I'm so glad that we did it.
The only gig in the West End right now, I think. We're all going to come out of this. Your CVs are going to be the only ones that have had any like actual meaty stuff in them, I think. How have they worked on this many shows during lockdown? All the theatres were shut. Well, we were doing four a day. I think that's brilliant. And I really admire what you're doing. What is the best way for people listening to this? Obviously, I'll be linking the YouTube channel and everything, but how do we find you?
I think the best way of doing it is going to, in the first place, our Instagram or our Facebook page, because the main updates are there, and that will lead you to the live stream on Friday evening at 7:30. And the great thing about that is, obviously, you never know who's watching, some of the performers, maybe the writer, and it's quite a nice opportunity for people to interact and comment on that as well in the live chat that's there too. So it's quite a communal thing. It's a little bit like before a show and in the interval and maybe afterwards at the stage door built in as well, so people can schmooze if they're missing that as well. So everything that we can do really, apart from ice cream, to get that theatre vibe, if you join us on YouTube Friday at 7:30.
And this podcast is definitely going out on Friday as well. So it's tonight, people. If you're listening to this today, it's tonight. There you go. I will say, if there's one aspect of the theatre world that it's the schmoozing that I'm a little bit worried. I think by the time lockdown's over, my social skills and human interaction experience will have gone out the window. And I found schmoozing sometimes socially awkward at the best of times. Like, I don't know how getting back into it's going to go down, but there's still aspects. So,
that's why we worked in that's why we're in the wings.
Nice plug there. Nice plug.
You're
there,
welcome.
Justin,
I think you're all week.
as are we all. I think that's a perfect spot to wrap up. Henry and Justin, thank you so much for your time to chat to us about In the Wings. I think it's a fantastic venture you've gone on, and the platform you've given artists to bring them at least some closure to shows that should be on right now. I think that's brilliant, giving it a new lease of life. Good on you. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Cheers.
Right. We'll see you in the wings. wasn't as good as Justin's plug, but I'll take it, you know. Fab, we'll see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the London Theatre Podcast. All previous episodes are available on Spotify, iTunes, and SoundCloud. You can go to our website, thelondontheatrepodcast.com, and you can email us, thelondontheatrepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter, @LTheatrePodcast, that's L for London. And yeah, share the podcast. Leave a review, why not? You can also find more information on the shows, artists, and topics discussed in the podcast description if you're looking for some handy links. But thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. Take care.